Hi folks, and all of you at the Sovereign Independent from Canada, best wishes. This is one of the first days actually I've been outside because it's been raining all spring. And the reason I've got this hat on is because there's millions of mosquitoes around here just love to get into your scalp. So all you supporters have gathered, I'm sure that you've all gone through the same righteous indignation, a healthy process of waking up when you see what's been happening to what you thought were was your country and your people. And you've watched basically a superstructure being built around your entire system by people who generally are unelected, although they put politicians into office too, and they belong to very high societies and secret societies. Basically, they are secret, in fact, because they don't like the public to know about them. Some of them we know, ones that have to be involved in the spotlight, basically, like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the European Department of International Affairs now, too, for all of Europe. And the society, as you know its history, it's been on the go for an awful long time. It came out of the merger of the Cecil Rhodes Group and the Roundtable Societies and Lord Alfred Milner, their idea being to create the Greater British Empire. The initial British Empire started long before them, no doubt by their ancestors too. But anyway, they formed this one 100 odd years ago and decided to take over all the resources of the world. And they believed staunchly in Darwinism, as you well know. Since they had the power, and it gained the power of finance and commerce, then they deemed it their proper place to rule the rest of the world. And they also employed academia and think tanks to work on a big project called the New World Order. And the New World Order, as you know, is all across the whole planet now, going through different stages all at the same time, different facets all moving together on social areas, and how we'll live, what we'll eat, if we'll eat at all, in fact, with a grand design that eventually we'll all be born to serve society or the world state, which of course is owned and controlled by those who've already bought over the resources of the planet. Ireland itself, of course, has got a long history of this particular world order, because the precursors of it, of course, or the predecessors of the present group who run it, it's intergenerational, mentioned in the 1500s and 1600s that they would use Ireland as the breadbasket for this great British Empire. They didn't come up with that casually as an idea. They took that idea from ancient Egypt, because Egypt itself was a very fertile valley, of course, massive crops and good livestock, and the Romans were the guys who came up when it was their time to build the empire. They came up with the idea of using Egypt as the breadbasket for the Roman Empire, and most of the food was shipped out to the colonies which they occupied to feed their troops. The same things happened, of course, to Ireland, as you well know, at least those who know their history of Ireland, and Scotland as well, for that matter. Ireland's had a very, very old culture, ancient culture, going way, way, way back. In fact, even ancient Rome, pre-Christian Rome, used to send some of their students, their brightest students, over to a university there in ancient times. There was another one or two in Scotland as well. Stuff that you don't get in modern history books, but it certainly was there in the old history books, because we're not supposed to realize that we have something really to hold on to, a very old culture. Culture, of course, had to be destroyed, as you all know as well, because you have lived through a great part of this culture destruction. The older ones amongst you, I'm sure, can remember the massive sexual revolution that came from the top down, not from the bottom up, and how basically, along with the pill at the same time and lots of drugs, all the youth were told from the top, from the BBC and all the other ones, to have a great time. There was no consequences to anything. And if there were consequences at all, don't worry, medicine and surgery would take care of it for you. And that was to be the beginning of the end of the destruction of the family unit, because all societies down through the ages have survived by being cohesive in basically a family unit, or even greater family unit, such as a tribe or a clan. That all had to be destroyed because every impediment in the way of this new world order getting its way depended on creating a form of what people thought would be individualism. And in reality, they're all doing the same thing. They just don't know it. So their culture has been given to them. It's been updated each generation with a little bit more and more and more sex and violence, promiscuity all over the place. And the mandated teaching, not of sexual education in the schools, but a promotion of sexual education in the schools to make sure that the earlier they indulged in promiscuity, the least likely they would be to bond. And that's happened. That's happened. Society today, across the so-called first world countries especially, is pretty well finished. They don't want children, and as I say, surgery and medicine takes care of all that kind of side of it for them. Now, along with that too, as I say, came the destruction of the cultures. People don't realize that Ireland and Scotland too had great cleansings in the past. Famine's been used, and famine didn't come about by bad crops. It came because of basically London running the whole of the UK, plundering the food for their own supplies across the sea to feed the troops, etc. The worst famine in Ireland had at the same time its biggest exports of grain and cattle outside to other countries by those who owned the land, or took over the land, I should say. In Scotland, later they had the Highland clearances, and in the clearances too, they forbid you afterwards to speak your own language. The culture had to be destroyed. You couldn't even wear the clothing of your clan. So what you have is deculturalization, and then the creation of a new culture based upon economics. Your value to an economic system, not to your people or yourself, your family, but to an economic system. I'm sure all of you are so sick and tired of hearing about the economy, and how it must compete with China. What a ridiculous joke. Ridiculous joke. So, what's happening today? Where are we today, even with all of this? Well, we know that the United Nations was created by the Royal Institute of International Affairs. Same boys set it up to be a good front for them, because through binding treaties, ever increasing and ever binding, more and more every year, they would bypass all national sovereignty, which they have been awfully successful at. And eventually they'd have a system where the three main trading blocks or regions, altogether the world would have 10 regions. And eventually you'd have a loss of national sovereignty as you were integrated again through laws and legalities and ever increasing legislation. You'd be integrated completely into the new system, the new block. And they hope, and they're quite right, I can see it happening, that eventually through education, starting very young, you think of yourself as being international. Young children already do. And they don't see anything wrong with it because they've had all the right kind of propaganda. They have no idea of history. They have no feeling of the past, or bonding to their ancestors, predecessors, or the great things their countries have given to the world. And by that I don't mean simply economics at all. The literature has come out of them, and all of the terrific society, the culture, the rich cultures that came out of them, they don't know about that. They've all been given the same music culture, the same video culture, and it's been drummed into them since kindergarten. Kindergarten, by the way, started up by the same bunch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. They promoted it heavily. They took the idea from Germany. They already ran a good part of Germany, in fact. And Milner himself was from Germany. And they knew they had to get them very young. and drum into their heads this idea, ever increasing with every generation, of globalism, and prepare the minds to accept that which they would eventually see and feel and experience down the road in their lives. It's astonishing, really, when you think about the amount of think tanks that are at work all the time, working on this great project of integration. They work it out like a battle plan. And I literally mean that as like a battle plan, a great big battle plan, where every possible consequence of every move they might make, then they haven't moved the figures on the chessboard yet, but any move they might make, that they look to see what the consequences and backlashes might be. And then they prepare for all those backlashes before they've even started or moved one of the pieces of on the table, on the board. They know when there's going to be trouble with the people or different sections of the people, because we're all stereotyped into different groups. Especially now with computers, it's so much easier. We help them do it, of course, by updating ourselves every day on all our conversations, emails, and so on. So, before they make a move, they know the different types that will form groups and protest or demand or whatever. And therefore, they even set up, generally, their own leaders in advance before the move is made, before the consequences are made available to the public, they're aware of it, and then they give you often the leaders. And that's why you have to be so careful of leaders, so careful of the ones they give you. They'll also give you many fake leaders who will spin you off into the new age, because that's very important to ridicule all movements that talk about this new world order. And it's bad enough today when you mention anything about it, and they'll say, well, you must be one of those crazy New World Order people who believe in aliens and reptiles and stuff like that. And that's how they dismiss you. Very clever, but it's worked in the past, it will work again. So all you can really do is concentrate on a one-to-one basis on people who are already looking for answers. They're already asking the right questions, and you must teach them very slowly, a little bit at a time, until they can comprehend it. Never bombard someone who's asking questions with too much information at once, because they can't comprehend it, they'll shut down in front of you, and they won't want to look at it again. The regionalization process is very, very interesting, because we're already seeing some parts of Britain being leased off to corporations. Now remember that Professor Carl Quigley, who was allowed access as the historian for the Council on Foreign Relations, which is simply the American branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, he said that this new feudal system would really run the world. When you have corporations leasing parts of whole nations, then you're seeing the start of it, because leasing is like leasing to buy, and given enough time and more culture alteration, you'll find that they'll sell chunks off down the road. There's no doubt about it. We even see that happening now with the fake austerity and the planned bank crash at the right time. That was all planned to bring on this age of austerity, and the first thing they say is, oh, you have to sell off your assets. Ireland's been told this, Portugal's been told this, Spain's been told this, Greece. Well, who's going to buy your assets, your national assets, as they call it, and the ground that they sit on? Well, it's big corporations as well, no. And eventually, as we get used to this idea, then they'll start down the road, they will train children to grow up thinking they're totally international. And remember this, the whole idea or of remembrance of having a nation is to be eventually eliminated. Totally eliminated. Until there's no reference point to look back upon. John Dewey was a great proponent of this. In fact, he came from the same group that helped create the educational system to make all this happen using scientific indoctrination. And it's worked very, very well right up to our present time, but it's going to work better on the ones who are in kindergarten now, because they've never had such intense psychological indoctrination. And they'll have no memory, eventually, of having a nation, step by step by step. That's what they'll do. They're already talking about joining Scotland with Norway. But when they do that, what will they call it, the place then? What will it be called? There'll be a new name given to it, for instance. And that's how you're deculturalized. That's how it's so easy for the past to be eliminated. Back in the 80s, late 80s, they started dumping books out of all major libraries at the same time. And in the 90s, it accelerated. And you could actually go to garbage dumps in Canada here and take your pick of some of the best books that were ever written. Because they're transposing it all onto disc, knowing that discs are only going to last for a certain amount of time. And once the time comes and they bring out the new system, well, all that stuff goes out the window. No one's going to be bothered spending about 2 years of their life transferring all the discs onto a new format. At least very few will. But that is a system you're living in. It's well planned, well researched, and it's well, incredibly well managed. What's to happen to the nations in the meantime? Well, like Ireland, and they're really going to pummel Ireland, I know this for a fact. Ireland's been a thorn in their side for so long, and they actually mentioned, some of the big boys themselves, that they didn't like the Irish, they were inferior, etc. I'm talking about the eugenicists here, and H.G. Wells mentioned it too, that they'd have to eventually be eliminated if they could not adapt. What he meant by adaptation is that all peasantry across the world would have to adapt into the new system, or they'd have to be eliminated. And the Celtic people tend to have an allergy to tyranny, and always have had. It must be hereditary or something. And they don't take kindly to being used and abused and ruled over by these scheming megalomaniacs. We know too that it isn't just psychology that's being used, although massive psychology is used on a daily basis through all media and entertainment. Entertainment, remember, is the best form of indoctrination, because your guard is down. You don't expect to have anything implanted in your mind like a school lecture during entertainment, because that's what it is, right? It's just fun and games. No, that's when they get the PC messages across to you. And like Plato said a long time ago, basically monkey see, monkey do. And that's how they train, especially the young. But not just the young either. People emulate what they see. That's what soaps are for too. It's to do with affairs and so on. People will actually emulate all this. And we've seen this too in our own lifetimes. But they also talk about psychotronics. And psychotronics is an amazing system of really electromagnetic and pulse control. The brain works at a certain frequency within a certain little band. And a long time ago, the HAARP technology, that's the H-A-A-R-P, was invented a long, long time ago. In the 70s and then into the 80s, from Riga in the Baltic region of the Soviet Union, it was discovered they were pulsing through a shortwave frequency, which matches the brain, and they called it the woodpecker noise. All the ham radio guys who use shortwave they couldn't get signals out. That's all they got incoming, was this woodpecker sound. And I've talked about it on the radio broadcasts I do at RBN, and it's in the archive section. We can actually hear it, and you'll find that. I think it was one of the main US TV stations did a documentary on it back in the 80s. It's still going on today. And since 2001, as they can hear HAARP, if you tune through the bands on the shortwave radio, you'll pick it up 24 hours a day. Since 2001, it's been 24 hours per day. Now, what's wrong with this particular frequency? Well, you see, they've already admitted that they can alter behavior. with HAARP technology, because it does basically work within the same bands as the brainwave does, the human brainwaves. And they can, by slightly altering it, they can make people happy or sad or angry. And if you want to bring people through the biggest changes they'll ever experience their entire lives, and maybe in history for a long, long time, the biggest changes into a completely... A new world order isn't just an economic order or a new regionalism. It's a completely new way of living, organized by your betters, you understand? The betters are those people who can do nothing but work for think tanks, academia, the higher levels of academia, and they know what's best for you and how you should behave and how you should view the world. They'll give you your view of the world and all of that around you. So, you understand, this is an amazing system that encompasses everything. And through technology like the HAARP technology, and extremely low frequency pulsations, which we work on, our body doesn't need much of a current at all. Each cell in your body, all the different tissue cells, work on its own, on their own frequencies. And you can certainly match those frequencies. You can make a person rather ill too, if you simply attack a certain enzyme, for instance, and it won't be taken up by the uptakers, and parts of your tissue will simply not function. That's how easy it is to program us, much like any piece of electrical equipment. So you understand the dangers of using this technology. It's already working. I think it's already making people very placid, way too placid for what's happening around them. You don't hear people grumbling as much as they used to, say 20 years ago when gasoline went up a few pennies. They accept it all. And they're far more complacent than used to be about things happening that affected them in their world, and especially in their immediate surroundings. Something has happened to people, I have no doubt about that whatsoever. Something drastic has happened to people. We also know they've used drugs in the water supplies. We know they've gone after the food supply. Monsanto and all the big boys have taken over the world's food supply. 5 agri-food businesses run the whole world now, thanks to government as well, helping put small farmers out of business. And that's to be the way of the future. Big farms own big corporate farms. And therefore, they've weaponized the food as well. I have no doubt whatsoever about that. Because you see, the boys in Monsanto were they're part of the military-industrial complex. They were making chemicals for warfare right up until they suddenly switched gears and went into your food supply by altering the food that you eat. And then getting governments to back all the chemicals that they spray the vegetables with that you eat, and the cattle and all the rest of it that they eat it too. And then you uptake it, it's uptaken by the plant, and you uptake that, down the food chain it goes. And you can't touch them. Big money has passed hands, obviously, for governments to simply give them the go-ahead to do what they do. In other words, this is a must-be, as I call it, part of the big agenda, a must-be of the plan, to get all of this through. There's no doubt about it. And then you go into the writings of Lord Bertrand Russell and others who worked definitely high level for the big think tanks. And he said by diet, injections, and injunctions, we should create a placid, conformist society. We are constantly bombarded nowadays too to have more and more injections for flu or whatever it happens to be, or another flu injection for a new flu and all of that. Children have never had so many injections as they have today, a very, very young age, babies even. And when you go into the history of inoculations and vaccines, it's a horror show. You'll find the ones who, like Salk, Dr. Salk, who developed the polio vaccine, used cancer tumor to grow them on. He also used monkey kidneys. And we also know that simian virus 40, for instance, that ends up being in every polio vaccine, had no other function than to cause cancer. And Salk admitted that after the fact. And so did his colleagues. And they said, well, we thought that the benefits would outweigh the risks. And I guess that's true from the least point of view, because they don't want you living too long, you see, and they don't want so many of a population. And then you go into the history of Salk himself, and he was one of the heads of the Eugenics Society for America and Britain. He wrote paper after paper on depopulation and the need to depopulate. And suddenly becomes the hero who wants to make sure you're nice and healthy and happy. Trusting the authorities is a technique that's been foisted upon us from a very early age. Now we have natural instincts to trust leaders of tribes or clans. That's a survival principle. And in old days, of course, it was quite easy to get rid of a bad chieftain because, you see, there were too many of you and only one of him. And if he got too big in the boots or had big ideas of taking over and supplanting authority for all for himself, he was quite easily got rid of. Money changed everything. Money's a very old system. And I'm sure when money came into being, it came into being not just for as a means of exchange, but it already was there as a science, as a means of control. Primarily, it's control. And with money, once you have everyone on money, and you've made sure that everyone must use money, then you start the debt system, and then you come in with the bailouts, then you come in with demands to the king or the queen or whoever it happens to be, and you tell them what you want. And you can also hire armies to keep the people in line and check, if you like. That's the beauty of money. You couldn't do that in a pre-monetary system. So money is a curse, there's no doubt about it. We can't imagine going any other way than the way that we're living in today. We've got to remember, if we have been around for millions of years, we didn't use money for quite a few million of them, and we all survived somehow. So money brings a whole bunch of new rules with it. It brings standing armies, it brings police, it brings mercenaries, it brings whatever will keep you all in line and check. It also gives you careers. You become that which you work at. Unfortunately, you forget who you are, you forget you're a human being, or you put a uniform on and you will definitely forget you're a human being. And if you're well paid, you'll do whatever you're told to do, as long as the brotherhood that you belong to all happens to do the same thing. So we're living in a system which is not pretty. It's pretty evil, in fact, and it's been on the go for an awful long time. But it's not happenstance, it's not evolving by itself. It's planned as to the direction that it's supposed to evolve into. One thing the big boys never do is leave anything to chance. Anything at all to chance. Now, if you look at the writings of communism, and we know two of the same big boys created communism, they financed communism and its leaders, you find that they had 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 year plans, all in different areas of society and industry, creating big dams for water supplies or hydroelectric, things like that. We see the same system, the exact same system used by the United Nations. If you go over their various writings about their great plans for the future, 50 year plans to bring up this society, 50 years to change that society, etc. So the direction of the future is not unfolding happenstance, it's actually being forced along in one direction only, to ensure, of course, that those in control remain in control. If they did let things get out of hand and things evolve, as they say, cultural evolution, the way that they do by themselves, they would lose control. And they're determined never to lose control. They know where they want to take the world. Inventions too, by the way, and research and development are given out to scientists by grants, grant makers. The grant makers tell them where they want them to research into, because you see, if they can use these technologies, they can control the people all the better. So all research and development, all science is directed along one channel, and it's a channel that the big boys, okay, is being safe to themselves. The big society is a term that's been floating around now for some time with Cameron, but of course, the big society is the congealing of all of this system into the one system worldwide. But Britain has always been the flagship for testing all this out on the general public. I think Sir Thomas More said that the English were the most obedient people in Europe, and that's why they could do this kind of thing with them. They would accept so much, they have a great obedience to authority. And you'll find that they've certainly tested everything on the people in Britain. They've never really had the breaks that, say, America had, Canada had, and even Australia had for the average person. They could never achieve that kind of lifestyle for the majority of the public, including their history too. Mining, all that kind of stuff, kept them in mainly as a working class people, and taxation did the rest. But the big society has to do with the whole of Agenda 21 from the United Nations. Agenda 21 is also called the Program for Sustainable Development. And sustainable development is to do with, again, the proper experts deciding if you should be born, do they need you to be born, and if you're to be born, who should they mate up with whom to have you born. They don't like this idea of just picking your own partner for having children. In fact, now, as I say, they've made it almost obsolete. Most people don't want children anymore. They want what they think is fun, perpetual teenagers for their whole lives. That's what's promoted at them through everything they watch on television and through the magazines. Elderly people now, you see, are all senile and have nothing to pass on to, no wisdom whatsoever. And that, again, is a fantastic trick which they've used. It's in every movie that shows you anybody who's old, they've got to be senile and doddering around on their feet. When the wisest people of all ages were looked up to by previous generations because of the wisdom that they did have, and because they knew of all the cons that had been pulled in their own lifetimes and their predecessors, they kept that knowledge and passed it to the young so that they wouldn't make the same mistakes again. But Agenda 21 will have experts deciding everything, as I say, even if you're going to be born, what you will be born for, what your task will be, and they will decide what you'll be trained at. Nothing else, just that one training. You don't have to know about geography or anything else or history, just that one kind of training, the Sovietized system, actually a perfected system, more perfected than they got in the Soviet Union. That's what they're after. And it also has to do with population reduction and population management, again by the experts, on how many people should live in a certain area, to do with animal corridors for wildlife and human corridors for humans. But the humans have to be drastically brought down in size. We've had global meetings, again by the big philanthropists, because this new system has come out quite openly now saying, well, you see, we're not really democratic anymore, we're kind of post-democratic, and it's time that the big philanthropists joined in shaping the direction that we're taking in the world. You go back to Adam Weishaupt, and that's exactly what he said. He talked about building charitable foundations that would basically circumvent governments, incredibly rich, they'd gain wealth, and they would have a say in directions of population policies and so on. So we're already at that stage. We also see more and more people being appointed to governments as experts and not elected, especially in the scientific staffs. So Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century because they hope to accomplish most of this in this century. That's why it kicked off with a bang in 2001 with the 9/11 towers going down. That was to bring in the martial law across the whole world. This has never happened before, where a country has been attacked by anybody. Never mind two or three buildings going down. And the whole world has to go into martial law at the same time, which meant they obviously had it all planned in advance through negotiations and treaties. And believe you me, civil servants and bureaucrats don't work that fast, so quickly. And here they are all at the same time with the exact same strategies for IDing everybody and chipping everybody and controlling everyone. Same laws. That was the kickoff for the 21st century. The rest of the happenings we've had since then have been wars again across various countries, Middle East and so on, in order to make them standardized, because the Muslim religion, again, is pretty well the last one left, that still has a culture attached to its religion, very intertwined, you can't separate the two. They're not into usury the same way either, and that's a no-no. You must get the central banking system, which really is there to borrow money from private lenders and get debt going in order to control a country. And that's what's happening today across the world, as the big boys who already own all of us in our countries are now after owning the other countries as well. And that's what it is. They will own them, lock, stock and barrel, under the guise of bringing them democracy, which they tell us is now obsolete for us. We're post-democratic. That's the Club of Rome that said that. And once again, they must fulfill all of the agenda this this particular century. In the last century, the 21st century was to be the era of change, the century of change. That's what they called it in academia, in philosophy, in sociology, because they knew what was coming. At least the high professors, they've been working at it their whole lives, and they're funded by governments to do so, and think tanks and private foundations that run the philanthropies. Margaret Thatcher and others have called it a parallel society, or a parallel government, I should say. And that's what it is. It's a parallel government. There's hundreds of these foundations, and they employ their think tanks. They have members sitting on government scientific panels. They have members working inside government too. They have bureaucrats, a lot of bureaucrats working for them. They're placed there. And they also lobby governments. The governments know, of course, what they're expected to do. They're sitting waiting to be lobbied by these massive authorized NGOs, all under the United Nations, of course. They're authorized by the United Nations. And look at the umbrella of organizations under the UN to see how many there are. And they're all for that. But you would think were the furthest far left changes you'd imagine. Because it's a form of socialism is to control the world on behalf of the fascists at the top. It's more efficient to have massive bureaucracies and experts running every individual on the planet. On behalf, as I say, of these incredibly wealthy fascists at the top. They like order, you understand. They've always liked order. Order really appeals to them. It's got a ring to it. And anything that's untidy is a nuisance to them, and sometimes they see it as a threat, especially free thought. That's why all your writings on the internet, everything, the conversations are monitored to make sure that you're absolutely predictable. Absolutely predictable. Nothing can go wrong. Nothing can detract or sway from this direction we're going into, where we're actually into. Now, what will they do with this new world order? Well, as I say, the countries will disappear. They may even be bought over piecemeal, pieces of them, one piece at a time. And people will grow up into an area or a region and be owned by Sony Corporation or whatever the hell it might be. Who knows? But that's the way it will go. under necessity, of course, under bankruptcy's necessity, that's how it will be done. The big society is to work parallel with it to make sure it's uniform across the whole world. And the children have to be given a special indoctrination, so that if you mention a country or any kind of nationalistic idea at all, they'll actually think you're an enemy. They'll look upon you as being a kind of dangerous character with ideas of that silly nationalism or pride in your culture, your country, or whatever. It's all been done before on different scales in different countries and totalitarian states. This has been done on a world scale today, and it's got better indoctrination. I don't think there's a single movie out there anywhere that you could watch today that doesn't have a whole bunch of updated, politically correct messages included within it. Sustainable development is the big stick for forcing all this through. Remember too, if you're living in an abusive system, you must really abuse those who you want to control. And you get their allegiance to the abuser by getting the abused to believe it's their fault. That's how it works. And we're being constantly bombarded with big money, big organizations, well-funded through the foundations and your government, telling you there's too many people, they're just taking up the world's resources, and we can't just keep this going on for much longer at all. We had Prince Charles out, remember, a couple of years ago. Every couple of years he comes out and says, the world's going to end in 6 months if we don't stop all this consumption. And it keeps rolling along and we're still here, and it doesn't stop them, of course. They never stop, because every time they do it, there's always a certain amount of weak-minded people who believe them. So there's more and more each time they do it. But the sustainable development is to be a new peasant system, really, and the big society. The big society have categories of, again, the class system. Don't forget the class system. It's no different than Canada. Most folk in Canada now who are buying places in the country are working for government. They're bureaucrats, civil servants. They can afford it. They get the special mortgages. They get the special rights to live on the land. They're not bothered by inspectors because they're part of government. Where everyone else is being harassed all the time with higher taxes, government inspections for pollution and all these kind of things. They put lots of farmers out of business under these pretexts and or pretenses. And it's not going to stop. So just like the Soviet Union had their bureaucratic class who could go off to the country and their wonderful dachshunds every so often to be served hand and foot, you have a class system across the world, again, starting in Britain, with the upper income brackets who work in government, who will have their better communities, their gated communities, and their rather expensive homes, but they'll get special discounts, etc., and special mortgages to buy them. It's already happening, in fact. The rest of the public have to be crammed into the already existing major cities. That's the agenda. And if you read the report, I mentioned it's in the archive section at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, the report from the think tank for the British Department of Defense and the other one for the US Department of Defense. Both think tanks came out with the same, pretty well identical reports on projections for the next 50 years, where they talked about bringing the population down. And suddenly around 2030 to 2050 or so, there'd be a drastic decline in population. They mentioned it could be plagues. Well, a great place to get a plague is and catch it for sure is in a city situation. And if they bring in famine, which they also plan to do, by the way, food shortages. Remember, five agribusinesses basically own most of the world's food right now. Easy to cause a food shortage, especially when they're gambling the stuff on the big stock markets, the big casino. But they want the peasantry to be crammed into the city, still produce as they can produce at all, as they go under and die off. And by 2050, they expect some major things to happen. And eventually they say, magically somehow, they didn't explain why, that after that period, there would be world governments before that, actually. It wouldn't last too long, and then the world would have just a few city-states, like the old ancient times, a few city-states across the world. Didn't mention where all the population went to, of course, and didn't mention people being left on the country anywhere, just these big high-tech city-states, I guess with the right breed of people living in them. The more adaptable type for the Darwinian theories, you see. As I say, those who can't adapt must die. That's their theory. And we even have some documentaries coming out from people showing us these wonderful simulations of these wonderful city-states where they'll be driving, if they drive at all, these electronic cars or pollution-free cars of some kind or another. But you don't see crowds of people in any of the simulations. There's never crowds, as you would see in the modern cities today. So big plans are underway. And you've got to understand, too, the big boys keep talking about something else. They call it pragmatic. All the reports by the Russells and the Wellses and Charles Galton Darwin and many others to do with the future. And remember, they all belong to the top think tanks that created the culture that we've already lived through, and some more to come yet. So they talked about the 21st century would be more pragmatic. Remember that word, pragmatic. And it's mentioned many times in their writings. What do they mean by pragmatism? They mean that in order to get their way into this ideal society, they can't be held back by human emotional responses to what they're doing. Everything must be utilitarian. We already see it in the US, where they're bringing in a British form of National Health Service, but even on a lower scale, I think, than even Britain's at right now, which is pretty, pretty bad, as they cut back. It's called pragmatic, you see. Cost too much money for people who can't really afford it, or the people themselves don't have the same value to society that we really need, so we'll not give them any health care at all. That's pragmatic, being pragmatic about it. You must bail out banks, of course, that plunder you, and never change the laws because they'll plunder you again. That's why they don't change the laws. But you mustn't keep people alive if they have no real commercial value anymore. We all have a price, you see. Under the, you don't realize we're living in a completely different world from the one that the elite inhabit. And how they view us is completely different too. We all have functions to serve them. It's all economics. And if we don't have enough economic value, we were really nothing, we're disposable. That's what they mean by being pragmatic in the 21st century. It's the same with the wars, as I say, that are going on across the Middle East, as they overthrow governments, well-planned, long-drawn-out, long-term agendas, well-financed, to standardize the world. They can't have all those peasants living, doing what they want to do. No, we've got to blow a lot of them away, and then keep what's left and indoctrinate a young generation to form a new government who will serve us, meaning the big elite that exists across the world. Everyone must have an economic value to serve the system. We see it in the police forces too, has become rougher. Remember, a whole generation's grown up now watching, beginning with Rambo, and then going on from there, the tough guys with the big, big guns, and now the black suits, and they grew up playing video games, wanting to be the winners. That's what video games are about, killing and winning. And you belong to a brotherhood, all wear the same uniform, and you don't see the old type police officers anymore, but they had courtesy and respect for the public whom they knew they served. In fact, the public now have been conditioned that you serve them and you jump and obey. We are in a dangerous situation, and this has got to be stopped. This has got to be stopped. And people put back in their places, because we're going into a hell on earth. We're actually pretty well in it now. We're not right in the middle of it yet, but that will come if we don't stop it. And remember that everything is coming from your tax money. The whole darn system depends on you paying taxes. In fact, that's all the elite think you're there for. And have many more taxes to get rid of your disposable income in a post-consumerist society. That's what they tell us now. You were lucky to be able to afford to eat in the future or heat yourself. That is what they mean by being pragmatic. They're teaching us as though we're dumb beasts. Now, I could go on and on, but don't have the time, obviously. But for all you who are gathered there, you all started as individuals, coming to conclusions by yourself. And then you get together, and then you form a group of like-minded people, and then you gain, hopefully, political power, because you must start to expose this system and do your homework and look at all their big plans and get the documentation so that no one can laugh at you. So here's the plans, here's who wrote it. And then start demanding answers. I mean demanding answers before it's all too late, because I think our histories are far, far too important to throw out the window. And I think all those who went before us, all your ancestors who went before you and who had to live in tough conditions too and bad times and who got through it, I think you should look at them with pride rather than as being primitive, as the big boys want the young children to believe in it now, or to view them now. We have a say in our future. No one has a right, I don't care how much money is worth, has a right to say he's got a better right of decision making over you and how your life should be run, controlled, or eliminated. I don't think so. No one on this earth is superior in that respect. Every creature born has its own rights, its own self-determination. So it's up to you. And believe you me, it all starts with meetings like the ones you're having right now. So good luck and all the best in your endeavors.